welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. We're a little bit late in recording. We're recording this Monday morning, and it's because of me. You may hear I'm struggling through the end, I hope, knock on wood, of laryngitis. We could not have done this podcast 24 hours ago. I mean, I guess we could have, but you guys would have all been more tired than normal of hearing me. So appreciate your understanding, although we had a great game Sunday night. We're going to talk about that. Joining us from Oklahoma City on this Monday morning is Royce Young. Good morning, Royce.
Good morning, Brian, and I'm glad to hear that you can speak and everything is doing better.
Well, it's early. I was. This is the first time I've been sick in this era, and I was obsessively taking my temperature like last Thursday and Friday.
Oh, I had a minor cold like maybe 2 weeks ago, and it makes you feel so self-conscious when you're like somewhere and you like sneeze or cough or anything.
Oh yeah. Oh my God.
Like it's all good. Everything's good. Promise.
And I'm happy to be able to report that joining us from quarantine, we can reveal that Dave McMenamin is in quarantine in Orlando, moving from layer two of the bubble into the primary layer, probably just in time to see the Lakers. Well, I'm not going to make any assumptions. I don't want to be that guy. But Dave, quarantine, day two?
Day two. Yeah, I said goodbye to our dear friend Tim Bontemps, dropped off a bag of snacks at his room. The bubble binoculars. He can start taking those binocular shots for Instagram now. And in here until Saturday, I think. Get out in what would be time for Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals if it goes that far.
Oh, if necessary.
If necessary, because the Nuggets left one on the table, although the Lakers took it. But I mean, the Nuggets could have evened that series last night. Did not on a spectacular Anthony Davis, but it was actually just a really high level last few minutes of the game. The fourth quarter overall was a little sloppy, but the last few minutes just back and forth shot making from Jokic and Anthony Davis. Dave, you couldn't go to the game because you were in quarantine. First game you probably missed.
It is, yeah. Just a bit of, I'll take it though, a mixed bag, but. I mean, first of all, you mentioned it. It was a sloppy game, and especially for the Lakers in the second half. You know, they have a 16-point lead, 8 minutes to go in the third quarter. You know what type of team Denver is, and it was a team effort, and quite frankly, a team effort led by LeBron to try to squander it. LeBron, for as brilliant as he was in the first half, 8-for-11 from the field. Second half, he goes 2-for-9. He has 4 turnovers in the fourth quarter. I think he's 1-for-6. And they were just stagnant. And Denver, when they get confidence, can play as well as any team in this league. Jokic was making everything down the stretch. I think he scored the last 12 points for them. But, it helps to have veterans who know what they're doing. Rajon Rondo told Frank Vogel, hey, like, let me get in there. We gave a different inbounds passer for this final play. As Rondo put it, when I asked him about it, he said, I made eye contact with all my guys. I looked at Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to see if he was going to go.
By the way, I know he said that. I know he said that, but he wasn't throwing it to either LeBron.
Are you suggesting that he has such discrimination that if a guy skirts open, wide open, under the basket on a backdoor cut, he's not going to give it to him for a layup to win the game?
Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was not interested in the ball in that moment, but... But I do think it's interesting that Rondo was the trigger man, because Rondo would have no qualms about not giving the ball to LeBron. You know, he has that freedom, whereas another player may have been like, this has got to go to number 23.
Oh, for sure. And it's such an interesting layer to this thing because, LeBron, that's become part of who he is. And for years, and Brian, you were up close and personal for it, when he came into the league, he was criticized for not being the guy to take those shots. Well, now LeBron has 5 game-winning buzzer beaters in the playoffs, more than any other player in league history. So that's really part of who he is, to get that shot.
Well, here's the thing. I'm sorry to interrupt you again. Just to be clear, this has always kind of bothered me a little bit, but like there are a couple of different game winners. Like the one that Anthony Davis hit last night, which is where the ball goes through the basket as the horn goes off, which, as you mentioned, LeBron has five of, that is deemed, you know, the supreme shot. But LeBron has several dozen times where he hit a shot, even if it was in the last 30 seconds, that effectively ended the game. You know, for example, Game 7, 2013 Finals, 1 second on the shot clock, less than 24 seconds to play. I don't remember how much there was. It might be like 18 seconds or 14 seconds or something. He hits a 20-footer to make it go from a two-point lead to a four-point lead against the Spurs. Wins the finals on that shot. Now, people would not come up when you did a little search and said LeBron game winners, but in fact he has a whole lot of them, including, as you mentioned, Dave, a whole bunch that have actually gone through at the buzzer, which to some people that has to qualify because, you know, that's when Jordan made his, or that's when Kobe made his. But go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that is the super premium, right? That's the Bentley or whatever. So the shot against the Spurs you referenced, which I think he said was his Michael Jordan moment, and I can still picture it, that pull up on the you know, kind of right elbow extended. You know, that's maybe a Porsche or something like that. I mean, it's still an incredible shot, but to have it where it goes to zeros while the ball's in the air is you know, that's the dream. And he didn't get the chance to take it, and I think is as much a credit to Anthony Davis for recognizing that he could get open in that situation. A credit to Rondo to shake off LeBron, because Rondo could have just thrown it to LeBron there without any movement. But really, it was a detriment to Denver defense. You know, they were kind of all over the place on that last possession.
Yeah, Royce, Mason Plumlee, Mike Malone puts him in the game, I assume, to try to defend any lob to Anthony Davis. And Anthony Davis starts out, the ball is on the baseline, because that's where Jamal Murray blocked it out of bounds. By the way, as a quick aside, it's not like Jamal Murray had a minute to think this over. But if Jamal Murray, after he makes that block and then he goes to save it and can't save it, if he throws the ball either straight up in the air, you know, or like way into the backcourt, you know, the game might end. And the other thing is, with where Danny Green was, I think Danny Green was behind the backboard. I mean, what's the percentage chance of him making that shot?
Very small. when he went into a shooting motion there, Brian, I was like, oh man, what a bad shot.
So like, I mean, look, he could have made it. I mean, the guys practiced that shot. I mean, what do you think, Dave? Is it a 20% shot in that moment? Maybe it's 15%. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not a high percentage shot. Rondo did make a shot behind the backboard the previous game of the series.
Which he said was the first time he'd made that in a decade. But
just in general, like Danny Green taking two-pointers, I'm not very confident in
right.
that. There was motivation for Murray to defend that the way he did.
I agree. I'm just saying, like, it just shows you how on a knife's edge all this is.
Yeah,
Murray doesn't block the shot. It may be a miss, and the ball bounces around, and even if the Lakers get the rebound, which they were getting a whole bunch of rebounds offensive, they may not have the time. It's just interesting how it worked out. But Royce, Mason Plumlee gets totally lost, takes the worst angle you could possibly take. He's already disadvantaged because he's slow-footed compared to Davis. Complete, you know, I think he wants Jeremy Grant to leave LeBron to go cover. It's kind of a well-designed play because Jeremy Grant, he's not going to leave LeBron. I mean, right. He's just not going to. But Mason Plumlee messed it up.
Yeah. And, you know, he did the classic, like, not really guard anybody, but point and make it look like you're communicating something to somebody. And it's like, you know, I'm sure that there was multiple breakdowns within what happened with Denver defensively, but it clearly comes back to Mason Plumlee, Brian, and him, either not sticking with Dave. I mean, like, look, it's a catch and shoot situation. So, you know, you can switch and you can do a lot of different things, but like at the end of the day, you know, the ball's going one place or another place specifically, like you said, last resort, Rondo's going to throw it to somewhere other than Davis or LeBron. So like, if you're Mason Plumlee, you've got to be trailing there. You've got to be attached to his hip. And you know, I think for Denver, it's one of those things where how, you know, and you mentioned a knife's edge, but how fragile a playoff series can feel. Because, I mean, waking up today and it being 1-1 versus 2-0 and 2-0 in that fashion, I mean, that was like – because, like, Denver was about to win the game that they win. Like, that's the way that they've won this postseason. And, like, to kind of build that spirit and momentum – now, obviously, they're a great team even when they're in a series deficit. So there's by no means should anybody count the Nuggets out of this thing. And I think that they showed that they made some proper adjustments. And as good as Jokic was in the fourth quarter, he is an absolute problem for the Lakers to solve. And so game three is not going to be like anything easy by any means. But the difference between 1-1 and 2-0, and especially 1-1 versus 2-0 on Anthony Davis hitting a buzzer beater that goes through. And you mentioned this. One other thing that I'd like to know a stat on, buzzer beaters that go through as the buzzer goes off when you're down. Like, because like, that's when you're like, it's win or lose. Like it's up in the air. I think there's also a difference between those when the score is tied and it's like, you're going to overtime.
Let's fragment it out yet again.
Yes. Yeah. That's,
when you're down by,
and it's that's the best like
6 seconds or less.
Well, a Lamborghini, Dave, is what.
Okay. There we go. Lambo. Sorry.
The interesting thing about the Rondo, well, first off, the super fans out there, especially the people who are really good at video analysis, I appreciate this, but within minutes at the end of the game, they pointed out that in the Lakers Nuggets game that they played in the seeding round, it also came down to a late shot, and Mason Plumlee was also on the court for that game, and he botched almost the exact same play. In that particular play, it was Kuzma. He was on Kuzma. And he detached himself from Kuzma, mixing up where he was supposed to be, and Kuzma ends up getting a wide open three. He made the exact same mistake.
He might have just listened to Tim Bontemps' analysis of Kuzma and be like, "Ah, you can't shoot."
He's got a gooseneck though. I thought Jokic did a great job getting out and defending that. And LeBron pointed out that Jokic defending that, getting out from, he was guarding the inbounds. Jokic getting out to Anthony Davis and defending that, challenging the shot, actually made Davis shoot the ball higher, which was better for the arc, which LeBron pointed out because he sees everything. Dave, we text a little bit about this afterward. It reminded us of the 2015 buzzer beater that LeBron had. Went in as the buzzer sounded. Check mark.
Were they down though?
It was a tie game.
Doesn't hit my criteria.
You're right.
But guess what? They were down 2-1 in the series.
Okay, there you go. Now you're getting.
What's in between a Bentley and a Lambo? I don't know. In that particular moment, David Blatt draws up a play for Kyrie Irving with LeBron as decoy. LeBron, to use his verbiage, scratched it and was like, nope. By the way, as just a little behind the scenes, Dave and I were in Chicago for that game at the United Center, and we were in the locker room. I'm pretty sure we were in the locker room. And J.R. Smith kind of gave that. I mean, nobody would have known that, yes. But, right? It wasn't like we were like, hey, on that last shot that the MVP, greatest player in the world, took, the play was designed for him. But JR, being JR, was like, at first Coach said Kyrie was going to shoot it. And I was like, what? And then LeBron stepped in and was like, no, I'm shooting it. And so, of course, we asked LeBron. And LeBron was like, yeah, I heard the play and I scratched it. So, by the way, Kyrie, one of the greatest shot makers LeBron has ever played with. I would even argue the best shot maker LeBron's ever played with. And LeBron had a problem with that. He was like, nope. In this case, he was fine with it. Of course, he was fine with it because it went in. But even if it doesn't go in, I think LeBron's fine with it. And partially because Rondo was throwing it in. And two, he just has that much faith in AD. And so beyond what happened in this game, I just want to say LeBron is averaging in this series. He had a great first half. But in two games, he is averaging 20.5 points, 8.5 rebounds, which is very good, and 8 assists, which is very good, but is below, significantly below, the average he had during the season when he led the league in assists. Now, he's shooting 52%, but only 30% on threes. He is not having a good series by his standards, and they are ahead 2-0, okay? Dave, if LeBron was averaging those numbers in any other conference finals, and this is his 11th conference finals, his last night was his 55th career conference finals game. He was 2 of 9 in the second half. He was 1 of 6 in the fourth quarter. And I would argue that in any other of those 54 games, those conference finals games he would have played in, that performance is a loss. And I would even argue 20 points, even at 8-8, is 1-1 at best and maybe 0-2. But because Anthony Davis is averaging 34-10 in this series, the Lakers are up 2-0.
Yeah, I think you're right on the money there, Brian. And I think you wrote that up for our site last night in our takeaways. And I was reading it and just nodding my head because, you know, there's not just the fact that Davis is so productive, but when he's productive, there's no rancor. It's okay. I mean, it doesn't always work that way. And I'm not just talking about LeBron and his teammates. I'm talking about any team dynamic where there is a superstar accustomed to certain looks, accustomed to a certain percentage of the offense running through him. And all of a sudden that switches in a series. That takes a certain type of trust between the stars to have that happen. It takes a certain camaraderie and chemistry on a team to, you know, the Lakers, what we saw in the last round, where, you know, all of a sudden Dwight Howard and JaVale McGee aren't playing, and you get Markieff Morris playing all these big minutes, you know, out of nowhere when he was only on the team since March. And then, you know, they had a 4-month hiatus, and he's basically, you know, a new body. But it worked because they trusted one another, and that's how it is between LeBron and AD. I mean, their rapport is unlike anything I've seen on in terms of superstars that I've covered in my career, and it's going to be a bit of a push and pull. I think LeBron's trying to pull something out of AD. I think AD's trying to pull something out of himself. LeBron's, I think, at this stage of his career, obviously more equipped for those moments based on experience, but who's to say that there isn't going to be a moment here? Maybe it's going to happen in these playoffs where AD is the torchbearer for, you know, the remainder of the partnership he plays with LeBron. And it doesn't mean like also LeBron's going to fall off the map or anything like that. But as Rondo put it post game, maybe it's 1A is Davis and 1B is LeBron.
Royce, I think off the top of my head, I don't have this stat ready, which I apologize, but I think off the top of my head, LeBron has only not led before this season. LeBron has only not led his team in scoring in two playoff series in his whole career. And Wade got him once in his first year in Miami when he was quite frankly a little lost. And then Kyrie in one of the, I think it was conference finals or finals. I can't remember, one of the series in Cleveland. To be able, and it's not all about scoring, but to see LeBron have this other weapon with him, I mean, I've said for months that I thought the Lakers were a player short, that I didn't think that just the power of those two was going to get it done. And I thought the Clippers had that depth. I was wrong on the Clippers, and it's looking like the Lakers may, in fact, with that 1-2 punch, have enough to do it.
You know, and one of the things, as Dave was talking, it made me think about this, is that, you know, I personally do think Anthony Davis is the best player LeBron's ever played with, but I think he's also the best, clearly the best fit with LeBron. And a lot of that has to do, and you talk about like LeBron kind of being okay, taking a little bit of a backseat, and Davis rising to the top is not the biggest deal in the world. One of the big differences in Anthony Davis versus playing with Dwayne Wade or Kyrie Irving is like LeBron is still pretty involved in Anthony Davis's scoring opportunities, right? Like when Kyrie had it going, like LeBron wasn't really all that involved. Like he didn't need to be. He could, you know, yeah, I guess he could rest up a little bit, but like Kyrie could just go to work on his own. You know, and Anthony Davis ISOs some, but for the most part, there's like some offense ran to get to the point of an Anthony Davis, you know, mid-range pull up or post up or whatever, pick and roll. I mean, LeBron's involved in the offense and he's part of creating those opportunities. And so I think it just kind of naturally builds a much better chemistry between the two because they're like playing together throughout the game, not taking turns. There's really at no point when you watch the Lakers play, does it feel to me like AD and LeBron are taking turns? Like, okay, I'm going to go to work a little. You're going to go to work a little. I really get the feel of a lot more of a partnership between them. And, you know, you guys are far more the LeBron experts than me, but I don't feel like that he's really had that. There was times where the chemistry with Wade on the court was like next level good, but that was like kind of like these flashpoints where you'd see like them play together in a sequence that was amazing. I just think in the kind of the totality of the game, like LeBron and AD, they just play well like together. They're just running offense together, and I think that really kind of creates just a much better flow. And you know, not to like extrapolate too far, but it sets up those moments where AD taking the game winner is no big deal, because you've just been playing together the whole game. And it's not like, oh, it was his turn to shoot there. It's not like when you're playing like match play and it's like in golf and, oh, I guess it was his turn for the big putt. I would have liked to have had the chance. That's really, I don't get that vibe at all between those two.
That's a good point. I want to stay away from the word best, because that's where people get their backs up and nuance evaporates. I have been using the phrase best all around teammate or most all encompassing teammate, because, you know, just by using definitive measures, LeBron has never played with another first team all NBA player. LeBron has never played with another first team all defense player. You know, you could argue that in their prime in Miami, that having Bosh and Wade, the incredible stretch the floor rebounding and defense that Bosh brought combined with the shot making, take the pressure off offense, overall beast that Wade was, you put them together, you wouldn't say that them together were less than Davis, but individually, I think that's true. And LeBron is completely invested in Anthony Davis's success. I don't know if, wasn't like he was pulling against Kyrie or Wade, but he was also trying to get his in a way, Dave. And I do think Royce is right. I think from the first game of the season, that game way back 11 months ago, when LeBron was force feeding Anthony Davis with like 20 post-ups, he has been so invested in Anthony Davis's success.
Yeah, or even like the All-Star game, obviously doesn't count for anything, but there you go, LeBron with the ball in his hands, could have pulled from deep. Instead, he finds Davis ducking in to the lane and feeds him, and Davis wins it at the foul line and gets the glory of that moment. There is a clear chemistry to the game. I believe we had a stat floating around in the first round that LeBron had more assists to Anthony Davis in that series than he had to any other player in any series. You know, that shows that their games fit with one another, and obviously it's a mutual proposition. When Anthony Davis succeeds, LeBron succeeds. And then maybe at a different stage of LeBron's career, he wanted to succeed a certain way. Maybe this is a heightened understanding of what really matters, you know, from a guy who's been doing it for 17 years, that you just want to win. Like, that's all that matters. And certainly Anthony Davis gives him a great chance of winning.
Yeah, and not to doubt at all that, or not to say that LeBron is necessarily like a stat lover and that he consumes himself with him, but you mentioned it, Dave, that like when Anthony Davis scores, LeBron gets a stat most of the time, you know, and it's a positive one. And that sometimes it's as simple as that. Like it helps you kind of just feel better about who you're playing with when you get a little tally in the box score when the other guy scores.
LeBron's care about stats it's complicated because he doesn't care and also cares a lot. Like, he wouldn't trade certain statistical measures. I mean, it's kind of like when you're playing Madden, right? You ultimately want to win, but you'd also really like to get your wide receiver the most touchdowns or receptions, right? Like, you... And maybe you force feed a ball to him, you know, or you, whatever. I know that's the way I used to play. I don't play anymore, but I like the idea of leading the league in a category. And I think LeBron feels the same way. He's not going to make it first, but he does care about the stats. He always is aware of, you know, every single timeout, Dave, what does LeBron get? He gets.
Oh, he's got a statue. I think he was walking out, pretty sure this is true, game seven against the Warriors. Because I was out in the back. He walked out at halftime holding a statue. I mean, that's just what he does. It's like
LeBron gets two things at every timeout. He doesn't like using towels for some reason. I don't know why. I mean, he does use them, but he uses these giant Kleenexes. And he'll wipe himself down with like five or six all the time. And there's this giant box that they use. So he's always got Kleenexes or towels or paper towels. And he's always got stats. Always, always. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Winning is an everyday mindset, and on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. I want to say something real quick about the LeBron MVP thing. The reason LeBron thinks that he's the MVP, he can't really say. And I don't just mean this year. I mean over the last five or six years, which he has not won. He has not won it now in 6 years.
7 years, 2013.
You're right. What the reason LeBron can't say it is because it's not proper. But the reason LeBron believes he's the MVP, in addition to his stats, I mean, and his team's success, that's transparent. Sorry, I had to cough.
Oh, I was on
thought it was a dramatic pause. I'm fired
up. I was like, man, this is because LeBron also believes that he acts as coach, he acts as general manager, in some ways he acts as owner. He acts as motivator. He was the one who made Anthony Davis to the Lakers happen. Okay. Did he negotiate the trade? No. In some ways he did when he basically said, get rid of all these guys. He is the one who brings the team together and sets the tone. He can't say that because he doesn't want to undercut his owner or his GM or his coach or even some of his teammates. And I don't think he actually intends to undercut them. But what he basically feels, he's like, listen, Steph Curry ain't doing this. Giannis ain't doing this. Giannis is not doing what I am doing for this organization. When the teams were in China and they couldn't figure out what to do, it was LeBron who largely grabbed the reins and got them through that, at least from a player's side. When Kobe passed away, it was LeBron on the phone with Adam Silver saying, we can't play this game with the Clippers. He was speaking for the organization. And even back to his Cleveland days, he was doing some of that. He was saying, no, go get me J.R. Smith. Get him, bring him here. I will make it work. I will call Kevin Love. Tell Kevin Love to come play with me in Cleveland, and then you work out the trade for him. I will tell us who that we should trade for Kevin Love. No, we don't want Andrew Wiggins. Get rid of him. We don't care. Bring in Kevin Love. He can't say it. And by the way, that doesn't mean that David Griffin didn't do a good job. It doesn't mean that Rob Pelinka didn't do a good job. It doesn't mean that Frank Vogel hasn't done a good job. That's the thing. There's nuance here, and when you get into the debate about the MVP, the nuance, the ability to have nuance just fades because you either yell that this guy is the MVP or that guy is the MVP. And so when LeBron says that Giannis was the rightful winner and he's upset that he finished second, he understands that he can't get the credit, but at the same time, he's angry he can't get the credit. And that is the basis of it. And so the way you see LeBron, as Royce described, handle Anthony Davis this year, Dave, is part of what I'm talking about there.
Yeah, I think that's an astute way to put it, Brian. But in this specific conversation to him and Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I'm not speaking on a conversation I've had behind the scenes with LeBron or anybody in LeBron's camp, but just my opinion here, he also looks at Giannis and says, I'm a better basketball player than you. And if it's a close race, Ty's got to go to the better basketball player when it comes out of MVP. And to me, that's how I interpret it.
Well, you're welcome to interpret it that way, and you have your vote, and you used your vote on LeBron, and no one's going to begrudge you of that. I voted for Giannis because here's the thing. Every MVP situation could be classified that way. For example, LeBron won his first two MVPs in 2009 and 10. In 2009, they won 66 games. 2010, they won 62 games. He was the far and away best player statistically those years. But he was not the best basketball player in the league. I think that guy played with the Lakers. And the Lakers won the titles those 2 years. And it was Kobe who was working with Powell and the rest of his teammates, with Lamar Odom, and creating a team that was just a beast of a team. Dave, you covered those teams. You know how Kobe operated. And so I would say that these MVP awards aren't voted on, you know, to a certain extent, they are voted on in the vacuum of that season. It's hard to vote on them in the breadth of people's careers, because if you want to take away the MVP from Giannis this year and say it's LeBron because of, you know, he is the better overall basketball player, then I think you got to go back to 2009 and 10 and take those away and give them to Kobe. If you're going to make that as your standard, under the standard of who had the best 65 game season, you know, in my view, it was Giannis. No one's going to begrudge you for voting for LeBron, but that's complicated because the other stuff that I talked about, you know, the voting is what you make of it. But the other stuff I talked about isn't traditionally part of the voting structure. And I know, Royce, I think you had a vote and you voted for LeBron, right? I mean, what was your, you voted for Giannis, but Giannis. What was your, how did you think about it?
Yeah. I mean, obviously it was extremely close. And to me, this is the kind of the beauty of the MVP voting. And as you guys know, as voters, it's not like when you get your ballot, they say, okay, here's the criteria for MVP, you know, and it's like listed out in front of you. You literally get nothing. I mean, it's just like, you click a little thing and it's like pulls up every player in the NBA's name and you choose which player you want to select. And, you know, like for the Heisman Trophy, it's like a player that represents this and that. Like, that's not the case for MVP. And you build your own criteria. And some people, that drives them crazy, I think, to not kind of have that guidance. For me, I think it's kind of the beauty in the voting and what makes it balanced to a degree and fair, because different people prioritize different things. And if there are some people that prioritize kind of like what you laid out, Brian, about kind of the totality of LeBron and everything that he does. And look, I don't think that there is a player in the NBA that influences the game on the floor night to night more than LeBron James. I think that's without question. You know, if it's one of those things, if you asked advanced scouts or you asked opposing coaches, like, which player is the most difficult to game plan for, or that you have to put the most thought, it's like, it's LeBron. Like, LeBron controls the game at a level that very few ever have in NBA history, but particularly no other player in the NBA does this season. So like, it's LeBron's award in that category, but like, for me as a voter, it is very much about the existing season that just happened. And while LeBron is a better player, I agree with Dave on that front. Like, it's just Giannis's dominance and statistical elements of it. Like, those things also matter as well. And the fact that his team was the best in the NBA, it's not like, and again, I think a lot of times people lose sight of this. Like, we submit our ballots before the playoffs start. Okay, so that there's always that context there. We can't predict the future. So, like, don't overlook the fact that the Bucks were statistically an absolute monster in the regular season. They were. I don't know where they would have. Where they finished in terms of net rating, but it has to be in the top five or six ever, I would assume. So, like, again, I think I completely do. I would never begrudge anybody that said I value these things and I vote LeBron. But at the same time, I don't think it's completely fair for people to look at it the other way and say, well, how could you just give it to a guy based on stats? Because I think that that's diminishing the overall impact of Giannis as well.
I think Giannis is a worthy MVP. There's nothing like – there's not an asterisk. He's a back-to-back guy, and he when you look at all the MVP winners years and years from now, it won't look off. What I do believe is that the general thinking of most of the awards voters tend to reward – things like analytics and PER and the statistical element at a higher degree than they ever had before. And I don't know if that's so good. Sometimes you just gotta trust like the eye test of what you see and what it, you know, the total landscape. And to me that could be missing a little bit. And a flashpoint for that was LeBron bringing up Marc Gasol's Defensive Player of the Year award back from 2012, 2013, because you know that he kind of won that based on all the team statistical elements and data that we had available to us that wasn't part of the conversation before. And I'm not trying to dismiss all those things. I'm not. I'm just saying the balance, the scale has changed a little bit, and. You don't always need, maybe part of LeBron's point is that those things don't always need to get that much weight.
Yeah. And plus we don't tend to reward like the institutional players of the NBA, like the guys that are like the foundational players. Like I highly doubt Giannis wins it next year. And honestly, he could probably have the exact same season. And voters just tend to gravitate towards someone different at some point. It's like there's kind of an expiration date on like kind of the attractiveness of a candidate, whether that's because of a playoff.
This is what's happened to LeBron, is that you no longer are just competing with your peers, that you're competing with your own standard.
Right, yeah, your own greatness. Yeah, exactly, Brian. And so, you know, like was this the greatest LeBron season ever? Like, no, far from it in terms of – like statistical impact. But I mean, you could make a case that it might be LeBron's greatest season ever for what he did in the grand scheme, like you mentioned, from China to Kobe to kind of like restoring the Lakers to normalcy to a degree. So like there's a lot of elements there. So, you know, and plus we all know it. You could easily just have given LeBron the last 10 MVPs, but what's the fun in that? I mean, like there's, you have to kind of evaluate it like a little more, I don't know, holistically throughout the NBA rather than just saying, okay, he's the best player. Give him the award again.
I do like, so LeBron, one of his things that is very a big part of his personality is he's passive aggressive, not 24 hours a day, but he does get passive aggressive and he gets upset when you call him passive aggressive, but he absolutely is. He just sent some tweet the other night.
Yeah, what was that one? I need to know.
Nobody knows, but it's a classic LeBron passive-aggressive move. So one of his things he likes to do is complain about not the actual MVP vote itself, but his way of sort of protesting it is saying, well, I was upset that I only got 16 first-place votes. Mm-hmm. No, LeBron, you were upset that you did not win. 60. You know, what was the threshold he would have been acceptable with, Dave? Would it have been, you know...
Exactly the right amount.
It reminds me of 2016 when the Warriors won 73 games. And I promise you, LeBron believed then, as he does now, that he's better than Steph Curry, okay? But Steph was unanimous. And, you know, look, he can't, you know, LeBron couldn't in good faith come out in front of the media and say, I think I should have won. But so he complained that he finished third behind Kawhi Leonard. that he somehow thought he was more deserving than Kawhi Leonard. Now, I think we can all agree Kawhi Leonard is a pretty damn good player. But, you know, Dave, LeBron complained about finishing third. He was really angry he didn't finish first.
Yeah, I think that's a fair way to put it, Brian. And listen, ultimately, as he kind of checked himself, like, hey, I'm fine. Like, he is fine. Like, if anything, this probably puts a little extra wind in his sails as he pursues a fourth championship, because yeah, that's what's left for him. The MVP awards, if he won it in year 17, like, that'd be a cool footnote, I should say. And it would add to his overall story years down the line. But what really will enhance his chance is what he says is his goal to be the greatest player of all time is to add championships. And so, you know, that's where he stands now, six wins away from adding a fourth ring.
It's kind of bizarre that, like, MVP is as important of an award as that is. It's not typically, like, on the front of people's tongues when it comes to, like, listing out, like, your greatest player of all time credentials. Am I wrong in that? I don't feel like people just immediately go to, like,
that's the thing.
Kobe's MVPs or Michael Jordan's MVPs is, like, their bullet point criteria.
It's not like in 2045 when people are talking about the all-time greats, they're going to be like, wait a minute, how many did LeBron win? Did he win four or five? I mean,
like no one says, hey, Kareem has more MVPs than Michael
exactly.
does. You know, like, no one does that.
It's like the most important award, no doubt about it. But I feel like it's like fourth or fifth or sixth. I mean, I don't even know where it would be on, like, the list of, like, on your greatest player of all time credentials, your resume. It's just, it's not that high up there.
It's just something that's very interesting and debatable. And the fact that the players participate in the debate only enriches it for the fans, which is why we've talked about it.
Yeah.
I will be interested to see how Denver reacts. They have completely created a persona of picking themselves up when they are down. They are not getting good play in this series from a whole lot of guys. Gary Harris has been horrible. He was a difference maker against the Clippers, almost like a mid playoff trade, getting him back. He's averaging 4 points on 23% shooting the first two games. Got benched last night for PJ Dozier. Jeremy Grant, who was an important player for them, averaging just 8 points on 28% shooting. Paul Millsap, who admittedly has been up and down. He has had moments where he has not helped at all. Other moments where he's been really good. He's only averaging 5 points a game so far in this series. So the Lakers are getting it done because they're getting it done with their top line players. Like I mentioned, Anthony Davis averaging 34 and 10. And LeBron, even though his overall averages aren't great, he's been pretty strong. But, you know, they're getting better. Like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Danny Green, even though Danny Green's not shooting well, but they're outplaying their opposite numbers from Denver. Denver's got to win the role player game. You just have to do it. And they're getting worked on it right now. So we'll see if Denver can pick themselves up and make it a series. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Before we go, we have a little hiatus here in the Eastern Conference Finals. Boston strikes back in that series to make it 2-1. Royce, Boston can look themselves in the eye and say that they could have won all three games of this series.
Mm-hmm.
But Miami has done a lot of good things. When you look at this series, where do you see it right now?
Yeah, I mean, but that's the nature of a playoff series, right? Is that you get to game six and you can go, man, we were just like one offensive rebound away. But that's like, that's where they exist. And that the margins are where you win postseason series, whether that's a loose ball, a call that doesn't go your way, a ridiculous shot, whatever it might be. And you know, at the end of it, it's just you win the games you win and you lose the ones you lose. So, you know, I picked Boston to win it in seven. And a lot of the reason for it was that I think that just kind of in terms of like long-term series matchups, they were going to kind of favor them overall. It, you know, I know that the Heat have had a lot of players excel in the postseason, and you see kind of these moments where guys will rise to the top, whether that's Duncan Robinson or Tyler Hero or whoever that is for Miami. But I think Boston's like 1-9 is just overall better. And look, as good as Jimmy Butler is, like Jimmy Butler did not play a very good game three. And you know, I think that Boston is just a little more reliable when it comes to where they get their scoring from versus the Heat. It's a tricky thing for me, Brian, is like when you kind of have that random balance that a team like Miami does, it makes you so dangerous and so difficult to guard when it could be Tyler Hero for 24. It could be.
I like that phrase, random balance.
Right. But like, you know, Jimmy Butler's their best player and he's the guy that you expect to score the most, but that's not the case for them. Boston, while they also have some level of balance, like they know where they're getting their points from. They know who they're looking to. And for me, I feel like that wins out in a playoff series versus kind of the balanced scoring approach that Miami has.
Yeah, and to me, Boston looked different in game three. Obviously, they did have those leads in the first two games of the series, but they looked different to me because Kemba Walker looked like a confident guy that we've known him to be for most of his career. And, you know, even when Miami went zone, and that was something that flummoxed the Celtics to begin the series, you saw Kemba hunting shots off of skip passes. And he made, you know, I don't think he shot all that well from three, but the fact that he was bringing that mentality to the court because, you know, guess what? That's going to, you know, maybe get them out of the zone. And then Kemba can do what he likes to do better, you know, try to attack the paint, step back, jump shots. And, you know, as you know, Kemba's not their best player. It's Jason Tatum. He's probably the third best player, but he has that confidence, I think, that younger players can glean off of. And then, you know, quite frankly, throwing Gordon Hayward into the mix, what he plays like Jimmy Butler does. Like, he has a complete offensive game. He operates from the same parts of the floor, and he is, you know, the lubricant to keep that engine moving.
Yeah, he had one of the greatest 6-point playoff games that I can ever remember. I looked at the box score after the game, and like, what did Gordon Hayward have? Like 18? And I was like, no, he had 6 points. But it
felt that very well, you know, that is something that has applied to the series that will determine it, because Hayward didn't even play 5-on-5 before he came back. I don't think they wanted to bring him back in game three. I think they would have preferred game four because they get this break and would have given him an extra 4 days. But they're down 2-0. They had to do it. So I think he gets stronger as the series goes on. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that makes a big difference. I suspect that it might, but that is a great series. That, to me, has got 7 written all over it, unless somebody loses a game that they shouldn't, where they just give it away, which sometimes happens. All right, well, my voice is fading. Thank you guys for hanging in there with me. Hopefully I'll be better later in the week. Dave, hang in there in quarantine. Royce, thank you very much. Thanks to Troy, turning the dials back in Connecticut. Thank you for listening. Everybody have a great week. Take care from the Hoop Collective.